Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that's seeing that girl, watching that scene, and digging the dancing queen. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and on the tambourine is my partner in propaganda, Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
This, Steve, is the first time we've recorded together, just us two, in the nuclear bunker, I think since the summer. All three main political parties, including the Lib Dems, have had their conference, and the final conferences are being held this week. Or being held this weekend. We're going to take stock of British politics after conference season by looking at the resolutions that we gave each political party at the start of 2018. And we're going to see how far have the parties made good on our hypothetical wish list. We start with the Tories, Steve, because they are in office, if not necessarily in power. If we go with my favourite and very subjective way of working out what cut through from conference season, it wasn't Boris Johnson running through a field of wheat, or Vince Cable's erotic spresm, or any of Labour's kind of policies. What instead it was Theresa May dancing. That's basically the only thing of conference season that cut through to the colleagues I share an office with.
Yeah, and honestly, that's not necessarily that surprising. The things that tend to cut through are either genuine game changers, that think the Clause 4 removal under Tony Blair, or something that's deeply emotional. One thing that I thought might have cut through a bit more than it did was when Theresa May was talking about how her godchild had died of some form of cancer. Those sorts of things tend to cut through quite strongly. Although in this instance, for May, it was overpowered by her dancing as she came onto the stage. And ultimately, the reason for that is it's a very good piece of viral media. The minute a politician does something like that, it's guaranteed to get shared online, which means it's going to appear on everybody's Twitter feeds, everybody's Facebook walls, it'll appear on everybody's Instagram feeds as well, which means everybody's going to see it, which means that'll be the thing that cuts through.
But by doing that, she basically upstaged herself, because no one really then focused on what May actually said about her godchild or about what she was talking about in terms of austerity and policies, which we'll talk about in a moment. Instead, it was all this kind of, viral moment. And admittedly, it did divide my colleagues or focus group, as I like to think of them, because you had some who just thought it was really, really awkward. And you had some, I think, who almost respected her more for it and might almost vote for her because of it. Whereas I just thought it was bad advice. It's not the right thing to do, surely. It's not. You can't criticise Jeremy Corbyn for not being prime ministerial and then do that.
Theresa May's problem has always been that she's, well, viewed as robotic. She's referred to as the Maybot. One of the things that they've desperately been trying to do with her is humanise her. That's the same logic goes into the dancing as went into let's tell this personal story about her godchild. You know, yeah, it's awkward, but she was clearly enjoying it, having fun. She was clearly taking the piss out of herself as well. You still want your prime minister to be a human being who's relatable. So I don't necessarily think it undermines that attack.
I'm not sure, though, if Theresa May's dancing completely dispels the rumour that she is, in fact, a robot. There was a lot of kind of angled.
I'm pretty sure at one point she did actually do the robot, so.
Yeah, Peter Crouch is suing as we speak. So let's look at the New Year's resolutions that we set the Tories in January to fix over the course of 2018. The first one, Steve, was to build an agenda. How's that going?
Well.
Is it? Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, I see what you mean.
One of the best actual critiques, I suppose is the best word, that I saw of Tory conference actually came from Owen Jones. We've had some very harsh words for Owen Jones on previous episodes of this podcast recently. But I believe he was bang on with his assessment here in that Tory conference was lacking vision. It was lacking energy. And I think that was very much reflected on the main stage. Whilst there were lots of individual policies that were announced, there was no theme there. I mean, even like the slogan for the conference for the Tories was just the word opportunity. Opportunity to do what? Opportunity for who? And that's very reflected in what they were talking about on stage when they were making their policy announcements. Really, some of them were quite good, like the policy on ending the cap on local authorities being able to basically borrow to build housing. It's a very good policy, something that's been needed for a long, long time. But how does that feed into the narrative of what the Tories think Britain should be like? Again, we had some interesting policies announced on funding for cancer treatments and things like that. Well, it's really nice and really good, but again, where's the narrative? Where's the vision? And it's very lacking. And from a policy perspective, if you're looking to build an agenda, your policy should be a talking point coming out of your conference. I could only probably name one policy that the Tories announced, which probably cut through into the real world. And that was the definition, that was basically the immigration plan, where essentially everything I heard of it, and this was coming from right-wing people in my office as well, they looked at what constituted a low-skilled worker under the Tories' definitions and went, what the hell, that's insane. Because basically if you're earning under 50k a year under the Tories' plan, you count as low-skilled, which means doctors who are starting out, teachers who are starting out, and most teachers in general, well, nurses.
Yeah, and not even doctors and teachers starting out. Experienced teachers and experienced doctors would also be missing out on this.
Something like 90% of Britain does not earn 50 grand a year. According to the Tories' definitions, 90% of Britain is low-skilled, which is absolutely insane. Broadly speaking, if you're looking to set an agenda and build an agenda out, your conference is the time to do it and make that announcement. And they didn't. There was a ragtag range of policies and a lack of overall vision. So they failed.
I think there's a few different problems with the Tories in terms of building out an agenda. One of them is that the architect of May's particular vision of conservatism, Nick Timothy, has now been absent from the government for over a year. And although he continues to write and make pronouncements in public with an admirable absence of shame.
And a lack of self-awareness.
There isn't really anyone kind of filling the void in terms of May. There's other people like Jesse Norman who are writing things about how markets need to be more moral and looking at Adam Smith, but he's not really a mainstream thinker who's helping May out. You're right in that there's no wider narrative in terms of policies and in terms of what the government's trying to do. It's all become very, very managerial in terms of the Tories are the party of austerity, they're the party of Brexit, and they're trying to carry those out. And explaining, and May's problem in the election was she's explaining them in very kind of cold, unemotional terms. So talking to the nurse about how there's no magical money tree. Now, one of the things that May did in her speech was say that the age of austerity is coming to an end. Except, of course, we're probably going to have a Brexit damaging to the economy, which means it's going to be even harder for the government to increase spending.
I mean, here's the thing. There's basically a bit of a contradiction came out of the Tory conference. Theresa May announced quite vividly that austerity was coming to an end. Philip Hammond, in his speech, basically implied it was continuing. So, one of them's wrong.
The other contradiction and problem with the Tories trying to set out an agenda is, on the one hand, they're trying to say that Jeremy Corbyn is terribly dangerous and Labour as a party is terribly dangerous, and if Labour's put back into power, they're going to put the ghost of Tony Benn in charge of everything. On the other hand, that policy you mentioned about scrapping the cap for local authorities being able to borrow extra money to build houses, that's a Labour policy.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, Labour is terrible. On the other hand, all the policies May has, such as and the austerity, and scrapping the cap, there's a few other examples as well, they're taken from the Labour playbook.
Yeah, and this isn't new for May to be pulling these kind of manoeuvres. I mean, when Ed Miliband suggested capping gas and energy prices, it was Marxism writ large, and he was Red Ed Miliband, who was, you know, going to nationalise everything. When Theresa May mentions it, suddenly it's a very good idea, according to the Daily Mail. People who are in the political bubble like us can sit there and go, oh, how terrible. Look, Labour's setting the agenda. They're just stealing Labour's clothes. This is a clear sign of the death throes of the Tory party at this point in time and all of that sort of stuff. And I've seen all that online. But the reality is, if having your policies nicked meant that the people who originally had those policies were going to do well, we'd be living under a Lib Dem government right now. Because multiple policies of the Lib Dems have been nicked overall. And as we've discussed previously on old podcast episodes, the Monster Raving Loony Party have had tons of policies actually implemented over the years. Yet nobody could tell you they were Monster Raving Loony policies. Because most people aren't, as we know, engaged in the day-to-day details of politics. So ultimately, the fact that they are stealing Labour's clothes doesn't matter, because as long as the people are seeing the Tories wearing them.
And no one could ever accuse the Tories at the moment of stealing raving loony policies. So building an agenda, not really happening, is it?
No.
It's a no from me. Second resolution we had was to work with the opposition. And interestingly, May in the speech went out of her way to praise Labour figures who weren't Jeremy Corbyn. So probably for the first time ever, Hugh Gaitskell gets a nice name check in a Tory conference speech, as does Dennis Healey, which is probably an interesting change from 40 years ago when he was taxing high-income earners 98p in the pound. John Smith gets a nice name check. Joe Cox, I believe, gets a nice name check. Details that have come out over the last few days of a secret plan to try and get Labour MPs to vote through May's Brexit deal. So it does look like on this one, the Conservatives have realised they actually do need Labour MPs to vote for their Brexit deal if it's going to pass. Okay.
So on the Brexit deal, yes, absolutely. And I think that's kind of a separate discussion. But I think the actual interesting thing is the fact that they're name-dropping Gaitskell, Dennis Healey and all those sorts of figures. Because I'm wondering if what they're trying to do with those that sort of name-dropping is make a play for Labour voters who voted Leave. Because these are the people who are largely going to be older, largely going to know who these people are, and remember Dennis Healey, remember John Smith, remember Hugh Gaitskell, and kind of go, oh yeah, actually, I remember them. I quite liked them. Or whether that be just with rose-tinted glasses or
maybe they just really like men with bushy eyebrows.
Quite possible. Dropping those names randomly just seems too unusual. That feels like it's a play of some sort, trying to kind of make it feel like this is actual Labour. These are this is good Labour. Jeremy Corbyn is bad Labour. Trying to just push into that kind of divide. Further, and if you can say, actually, I've got more in common with Hugh Gaitskell than Jeremy Corbyn does, you know, you can start to make a play for those kind of those votes who might go, actually, I liked Gaitskell or whatever.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I'm
probably overthinking it, but I just find it really odd that gets put in. I just don't see why you'd include it.
No,
like John Smith, I could totally get. But you're just going too far back with Gaitskell.
I don't think anyone's thinking, oh well, I've been a Labour voter all my life, but that Theresa May, she seems down with Hugh Gaitskell. She was probably in the campaign for social democracy with George Brown and Tony Crosland in the 50s. That's fine, I'll go with that. It's trying, I think, to drive a wedge between those people who Labour voters or ex-Labour members who aren't convinced about Jeremy Corbyn, and trying to say, or it's May trying to take some of their mantle. And you can see, I mean, that comes back to her first speech as Prime Minister when she was trying to talk about helping the people who felt dispossessed. You can see it with some of the Labour policies that she's taking and trying to adopt the clothes of Labour members. Look, will it work? Not so sure. In terms of the Brexit deal, that is a completely separate discussion, and I think completely depends on when is that vote going to happen, what sort of deal is brought through.
Yeah, I don't think the Tories can actually provide a deal which will meet all of Keir Starmer's benchmarks for backing it. you know, at various points, Emily Thornberry has said, you know, we are just going to vote down whatever the deal is because we want a general election, which, as the opposition, kind of makes sense. You know, you can argue whether or not it's the best thing for the country, but...
It's not the best thing for my sanity, a new general election, Steve. I'll tell you that for nothing.
Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry. It's probably not going to happen.
Work with opposition genuinely is a work in progress. There probably is some work going on.
But... Yeah, but it's only on Brexit. And the original thing we were talking about on this was a wider agenda. But again, they don't have that agenda, so they can't do it fully.
Well, that brings us on to our third resolution, which is to stop making everything about Brexit.
Complete and utter failure.
Yeah.
Like, it's taken them God knows how long just to even get a ruddy immigration stance sorted. I mean, we were supposed to have an immigration bill passed through Parliament by now, based on the original timetables.
Yep.
And it's only been announced what the actual criteria is going to be, like, last week. Everything is still Brexit, Brexit, Brexit. Like,
it's such a big event. It just takes, as we said before, all the bandwidth of government is just on trying to deliver it.
Yeah. People were much more interested in what was going on elsewhere at the conference than being in the main hall.
No, the fringe events with Boris Johnson, the fringe events with Jacob Rees-Mogg, which are, I mean, essentially wishful unicorn cake-eating, cherry-picking extemporations on Brexit and how to achieve the unachievable.
Yeah.
So that was the Tory conference, and Labour had their conference, and if you wanted to, you can kind of pick little things that happened. There were various calls for general strikes from MPs who hopefully now know better.
Praising militant.
On the Chamberlain Files, which is a Birmingham-based political thing, what they thought happened was that essentially Dawn Butler had talked about Poplar Council in the 30s and how they talked about it better to break the law than break the poor. And so Butler uses that line probably without thinking in Liverpool in reference to militant. And I think that's the issue. It's unfortunate. But again, you can pick holes, but generally after a summer which for Labour has been...
disastrous.
I mean...
There's no way to sugarcoat it. It was an awful summer.
It's been like stabbing myself repeatedly in the eyes with forks. It's actually a good conference. So Jeremy Corbyn gave a good speech, probably the best as leader, and some good policy came out of it. So the first resolution we had that Labour needed this year was to actually be radical and get vocal about it. And in terms of this conference, in terms of the stuff, the policies that John McDonnell has been coming out with, I mean, they're pretty radical.
Yeah, I mean, for the British context, absolutely. Making it mandatory that companies, I think it's over 250 employees in size, have to have 10% of their shares going to employees, so that employees have a kind of a buy-in to the success of the business. Brilliant. That's really, really good. It's a pretty mainstream social democratic policy, and it's only because Britain kind of moved so far to the right. Under Thatcher, Blair moved it a little bit more to the left, but not really far enough, and Brown kind of stuck it there, and we've been stuck there ever since, basically. That these ideas appear radical, but they're not. They're common sense, sensible, left-wing ideas. There are some interesting, by which I mean potentially problematic, aspects of some of the policies. So, like, the nationalisation agenda that's being put through is basically got some aspects of it which are being compared to the way that Hugo Chavez nationalised everything, in that essentially McDonald said senior management at all of the companies will be forced to basically reapply for all of their jobs. Which is an interesting thing, because that's basically how a lot of socialist, quote-unquote, countries force out the people who are already in the roles and install, basically, party yes-men to run them. Mm. Which has gotten some kind of little bits of conversation going as to whether or not that's what's going to happen there. If Labour wins and actually is able to nationalise those key industries they're going after, my guess is it's not necessarily a case of John McDonnell is going, haha, this is how we turn these things into, you know, Labour Party dominated things or whatever. It's more badly thought out comms. Never mind the fact that it's probably badly thought out business sense. Like, you don't want to be changing management straight away for these sorts of things, you want to just basically say, we're the new boss, you this is what the plan is for the next 5 years, and get them to it. If people want to leave, they will leave.
They should have just called it mandatory reselection.
All in all, the policies have definitely moved to the left. A lot of them seem to be pretty decent. Still waiting on that National Education Service, Angela Rayner. But other than that...
I think apparently she specifically didn't announce any more policy at conference just to annoy you.
Quite probable.
So in terms of the nationalisation agenda, what I quite like about the McDonald thing is it's... kind of nationalisation, but also public community ownership as well. So there'd be a unit in the Treasury looking at how we can try and community own some of these things, which is, so in Germany, there's energy companies often owned by the local community rather than by the government, which makes sense. I think with trying to change the management, I suppose it's overcorrecting a previous problem, isn't it? So one criticism you could make of the Attlee government's nationalisation in the 40s is that essentially the management was kept the same. They just kind of changed the name on the door from being a private company to a government company, and the direction itself didn't change. There wasn't a lot of planning there. And so I can see why in response to that you'd want to try and make a proper shift in direction. But as you say, probably done through more planning rather than by...
replacing key personnel.
I think part of the Corbyn paradox essentially is that on the one hand, yes, he's one of the more left-wing leaders that Labour's had. On the other hand, because of the nature of the Overton window in this country, what he's suggesting isn't that radical by European standards. And I think it's one of the most positive things about his leadership, for me anyway, is the way it has shifted the Overton window in the Labour Party of what we think is possible.
Yeah, I think the really interesting thing about the radical, quote-unquote, policy agenda that they are putting out at the moment is that we're still lacking little bits of details. And, you know, that's to be expected. We're hopefully, touch wood, years away from another general election, so there's plenty of time to work them out. Those little details are probably going to be the things that make or break those policies. So, for instance, you brought up what happens to the shares and things like that in these companies, especially when it comes to the ones that are nationalised. So how are they just being removed from the public from the stock market? Or are we just buying them? Those are two very different scenarios, because one just basically means you've just bought up a load of the shares and you own the company. The other is a very drastic shift which impacts on potentially millions of people's pensions. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong or difficult about a state-run business. Look to France, look to South Korea, look to Germany, and it works absolutely fine. But the thing is, it needs to be a state-owned business, not something that's basically being bought in to be run by the state. And that's something which I don't necessarily know if I think that's been made clear as to what the details around that are just yet. If it's basically just going to be, we're just going to buy British, you know, we'll buy British gas back, so and then it's just owned by the government in the same way that, is it EDF? One of the French power companies is at least significant. The French government has a significant stake in. You know, no one's going to actually react too badly to that, because it will just essentially be business as normal with a new owner. It's just effectively a hostile takeover, and that happens all the damn time.
I think the thing now with Corbyn's Labour is it's about, okay, there's going to be an election in a few years' time. We have a really, really good chance of being that governing party. Are we therefore going to go down the direction of Blair and Brown or Cameron and Osborne? So Cameron and Osborne in opposition changed the face of the party, but in many ways it was surface level. In many ways it was just tactical. There wasn't a lot of depth or a lot of bottom to it. Whereas Blair and Brown, as you say, didn't shift that Overton window a lot, but what they had got in opposition was absolutely ironclad, watertight set of policies that they could roll out that had been, they thought about all the practicalities, they thought about how does this policy fit with that policy. They thought, okay, we want to make sure that the Bank of England is made independent in the first days of our administration. How are we going to do that? Who do we need to talk to? How can we roll that out? And Now we've got a really, really good opportunity to make sure that it is ironclad and watertight. And as you say, I'm not expecting it now because, let's be honest, we've kind of been fighting elections and putting out fires and screaming for 2 years now. We've got, hopefully, a time to have basically clear red water. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's nice to see people like Joe Stiglitz are being brought on board to look at how much, as part of a commission, on how we're going to stop financial crises again. Mm-hmm. I think it is a case of watch this space, but I think it's definitely getting there.
Yeah, and I think ultimately at this stage, the biggest threat to a strong legacy for Jeremy Corbyn, assuming he wins power in some form, will be a lack of planning up front. If that planning doesn't happen, then doesn't matter what the policies are, the government's just going to start floundering, because ultimately the more radical you want to be, the more planning you need to do to make it happen, because you've got to navigate the civil service, you've got to navigate the politics, both internal and external, of those radical policies, and then you've just got to deal with the bureaucratic nonsense that just comes with anything you try and do in politics and government.
It goes back, I think, to the Nye Bevin quote, doesn't it? The language of priorities is the religion of socialism. I think one thing we need to work out, okay, is what is our priority? Is it going to be... Like, just for instance, on the National Education Service, let's just finish with that for now. Is our priority going to be taking all of those free schools, academies back into public ownership? Or is it going to be sorting out the curriculum? Is it going to be sorting out teacher retention? Is it going to be sorting people's mental health?
Or is it just going to be investment in early years or whatever?
Yeah,
absolutely. There's so many different options.
Are we going to prioritise education? Are we going to prioritise the economy? Are we going to prioritise this cooperative business model? That's what we need to talk about as well. Like, what will Jeremy Corbyn sign as Prime Minister on the first day of a Labour government? Like, what does happen? That's the kind of conversation we need to be having, I think, as well. Second resolution we had was to get momentum mobilised for the local elections. And we talked about that after our local election podcast in May. And essentially, I think momentum did mobilise. There were lots of activists going out. And it was a fairly decent night for Labour in the local elections, but just similar to polling generally, like what's going on is essentially dead heat at the moment. But you've still got that organisation, you've still got that enthusiasm that's there. You saw that at the World Transformed, where, like any political gathering, there's always a few eccentric ideas, but there's some genuine still passion and...
energy.
Yeah, which is, as you said, is kind of lacking in a lot of what the Tories are doing at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then the third resolution was to prepare for a snap election.
I don't know if they need to anymore. I mean, they still are. Like, they're selecting candidates, making sure that everything's in place. They appear to be kind of firewalling the previous manifesto, so they're not starting everything from scratch, like you might do if you weren't expecting an election for another 5 years or what, 4 or 5 years. But... yeah, I'm not sure there's a need to anymore. I just can't... short of Theresa May being forced out and then whoever replaces her calling a snap election, I just don't see it happening. And I just don't see Theresa May being forced out at the moment. Like, she's still hanging on by her fingertips, but she's still there. And there's no one to replace her.
No.
Still.
I think you're right, which also makes me think...
we're going to have an election next year.
Yeah. But I don't think it happens until March. But I think what is more likely is at some point after March, when that initial Brexit deal is negotiated, assuming it's negotiated, at that point, I think May announces some sort of timetable.
Yeah.
Because I think after that, it would become pretty much untenable. But Labour selecting candidates, on-seat events are still happening. So they're going round Boris Johnson's constituency, Ian Duncan Smith's constituency as well, which can only be a good thing. So Owen Jones doing a lot of good work with that as well. I think actually May's performance at conference probably means that she's got a few more weeks. I mean, we are told that the Brexit deal is 80% negotiated, but that also feels like when you say that humans have 99% of the same DNA as a banana. Like, I mean, that's true, but it's the details that are the most important thing about it.
Yeah.
And it's trying to see those details. And let's face it,
if that remaining 20% is still the Irish border, we've got a problem.
Yes. Who knew? Obviously not Boris Johnson back in December. But hey, that's politics, isn't it? Then the Lib Dems and all the other kind of smaller parties, really, their resolution was to be relevant and find relevance. And
so let's sum this up.
Mm-hmm.
The Lib Dems had an exotic spresm rather than an erotic spasm in the middle of Vince Cable's speech.
Yeah,
that was the sole takeaway from their conference. The UKIP went just full on fascist and have
the just, vacant centre ground, Steve,
and have just become so right wing that Bill Etheridge, a man who was kicked out of the Conservative Party for defending gollywogs, has now left them, saying that they are too extreme. And the Greens, I assume they had a conference.
Oh, it's happening this weekend. So the Greens, I think, policy was they want GDP replaced by a free time index.
To which my response is, free time index sounds like a good idea. Let's use that as a supplemental to GDP rather than replacing it.
Mm. In fact, it's probably in Theresa May's next conference speech.
Yeah, give it to the spring, yeah.
Yeah. And the SNP is vaguely interesting. Because apparently apparently their price for entering a coalition with Labour would be a commitment to scrap Trident, which tactically is beautiful. I can't think of a better wedge issue that not only really scares the tabloid right-wing press and Midland, but there's also a perfect wedge issue between Jeremy Corbyn and the other parliamentary Labour Party.
Mm. It's a masterful play from the SNP if they're going down that route. And it also provides a wonderful little lifeline for the Tories as well, though. Because it basically boils... Because they can start playing the... Jeremy Corbyn will have to do a deal with the SNP, and that means getting rid of Trident. Which, as you say, it's quite a big Middle England issue.
If they mention Coalition of Chaos in their election campaign, I will have an exotic spresm. Ah, poor old Vince Cable. That is his darkest timeline. That's it for this week. If you want to hear any more, we have a website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. Our Twitter handle is @nochampagnepod. And Facebook is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. You can find us on iTunes, on Acast, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you could leave us a review, that would be nice. Haven't had any reviews lately. So go on it. We'll buy you a pint. My Twitter handle is PaperbackRioter.
And mine is @AcousticRadical.
James Cram designed our logo, and Dave Deppert is responsible for our theme tune, Tucky Good Times. Happy plotting, everyone.